Just leave your dialogue, here's Bonneton. Lean back and stay a while, now here's Bonneton.
Are movies really better than ever? How much movie criticism is truly objective, and how much is the result of paid advertising? Can you depend on word-of-mouth judgment on a film? All these questions and quite a few more will be answered by Miss Pauline Kael, one of the most honest, hard-hitting, controversial movie critics around these days. She'll join us just a couple of minutes from now. Design on Monitor. Movie critic Pauline Kael has quite a few words to say about the film she reviews. And everybody from filmmaker to filmgoer has a few words to say about Miss Kael. Some of them are controversial, irreverent, smart, witty, independent, spirited, candid, and honest. Her new book, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, is a collection of her criticisms of movies, movie stars, and even us plain old movie customers. Pauline, welcome to Monitor. Let's start with a question that may be the toughest one you'll ever have to answer. What's your nomination for the worst picture of the year?
There are so many competing for that honor, it's really difficult. There are hundreds of worst movies every year.
What would you call the worst successful movie? Let's put it that way.
Well, there are a lot of movies I really hate that I know are going to be successes. There are a couple coming out. Rosemary's Baby is obviously going to be an enormous box office winner. I think you can feel it in the audience. I mean, people really react to it. It's going to make millions, and so I feel free to say that it's one of the most dislikable, distasteful movies I've ever seen.
It's really that bad?
Well, I hate it. You can't say it's a bad movie, but I think it's fundamental trash. I think the only movies which a movie critic really should waste any energy attacking are the box office hits that the critic doesn't like. There's no point attacking some poor little movie that nobody's going to go see anyway.
It's going to die of its own way.
That's right, but everybody's going to go see Rosemary's Baby, and so I would like to say how much I hate it.
That seems only fair. One question, is it possible that movie criticism as such has become sort of obsolete? I mean, we hear all about the fact that movie watching has now become so personal and so symbolic and so subjective.
I think it's more necessary than ever, because without movie criticism, you have nothing but advertising. And as it is now, advertising controls what people go to, what they buy, what they react to in this culture. And the only answer to advertising is independent criticism. Now, what people are not aware of is how much advertising already affects criticism. since large magazines have considerable stake in movie advertising and are often owned by companies that also have a share in the movies, so that there are very few independent places for criticism left in this country, and most critics are very cautious about offending either the advertisers or their readers. They're very worried about their readers, and you must realize that after people watch television shows late at night, and those shows are all plugs for different properties such as movies, and they've watched all those people sitting around on the Johnny Carson show saying how creative everybody was on the set of that picture and how great it was and how everybody loved everybody and how much it cost and all the rest of it. Then if a critic gets up and says, but the picture isn't very good, that critic is almost attacking the whole American way of life and all those beautiful people who worked so hard.
Mm-hmm. Nobody's ever bothered to explain that almost every bad movie was made up of beautiful people who
worked
there.
That's right. But never before have we had so many media advertising movies. Mm-hmm. Because television, magazines, newspapers, radio, wherever you turn, that movie is being plugged. And the saturation advertising for a big picture can make that picture seem important. And without a few independent critics left to steer people, there's absolutely nothing but word of mouth. And word of mouth you can't count on anymore, because if people, for example, go to see a movie like Half a Sixpence, and they know how much it cost and it got all that fancy advertising, do they really feel free to say, but it stank?
I thought it was a drag, frankly.
Yeah, sure. It was terrible. But I saw some of the same people who were walking out on the screening I've seen on television and radio talking about how great it was. And this is not unusual these days.
I see. Well, now, to what extent, you mentioned the commercial interests here, do these automatically translate into, well, not actually a gag rule, but the possibility or the fear that if you go too far in criticizing something in which, let's say, your publisher has an interest, that you're just sticking your neck in a noose?
Well, sometimes you really do stick it in a noose. But generally, it's more subtle than that. For example, a man doesn't make very much money as a critic, but he can get interviews set up with the stars of a movie. Once he's interviewed the star or gone on a junket to the location or done a publicity story on it, he's going to feel very uncomfortable about panning the picture. And he makes a lot more on the fringe benefits. I mean, nobody ever got a swimming pool from writing criticism. Eventually, he may want a job as an assistant producer or as a publicity man. He may want to get into production. But even just in his day-to-day living, he's a better guy. Everybody likes him if he's nice about the big pictures. And so he takes out his feelings of independence then by attacking the little pictures that don't have too much advertising budget behind them. And then he says, oh, but look, I panned one yesterday. The one he panned probably was a picture that cost $75,000.
Mephistopheles didn't come to Faust until after the sales job had been done for about a year.
Right, right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our guest has been movie critic and writer Pauline Kael, whose new book on movies, movie makers, and movie watchers is titled Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You've heard of stuffing ballot boxes, but Al Kep has a few sharp words about stuffing mailboxes. And whether you agree or disagree with him, you will not find it dull. So stay close by. Mr. Kep is just a few minutes away on the Monitor Beacon.
Assignment New York tells the story behind the news, who's making the news, and why it's being made. Weeknights from 7 to 7:45, WNBC tells New York's story by answering New Yorkers' questions. Listen to and call Assignment New York, weeknights at 7. You'll find out why.
Don't let anyone tell you how many children you should have. But after you decide how many you want and when you want to have them, let Planned Parenthood help you choose a simple, safe, and effective method for planning your family. For information on birth control, call Planned Parenthood of New York City, 421-2290. Planned Parenthood, 421-2290.
Monitor, New York. WNBC, New York.
You're back with Monitor, and it's now 17 minutes after the hour. Here's the voice of Marilyn May, and this is one of her latest, Montage from How Sweet It Is.
It was written on my mind like the back of an envelope, rehearsed and very carefully in reach. My cool cucumber non-committal speech that I wrote while hanging out down at the beach. And I shivered from the cold of the ice in my granite heart, knowing that you didn't have a prayer. And then I rang the bell and you were there. I tried to close my big fat mouth before I love you fell out on the floor. I didn't feel like that girl anymore. I hit my funny elbow on the door. And then your sister asked if I had money for a hairdo, and I realized my hair was in a mess. And suddenly I wished I'd changed my dress. And darling, then your grace was full of me. And then your eyes were too. And I knew that you knew that I.
Is your daily mail a bit overcrowded with ads and elaborate brochures and various requests for funds and things like that? That's strange. Same thing's been happening to Al Capp. But our expert on nothing with opinions on everything fights back with barbed words and comments fired from the lip. So say, here's Al Capp.
Just as you do, I get lots of requests for contributions through the mail. And one of the bulkiest envelopes, and certainly the most handsomely printed, came in this morning, all in brilliant full color, including slick paper pamphlets and lots of other literature and photographs and reprints. It was from an organization called Students Mobilization Committee. Well, they said they needed money, and I'm not surprised. Mighty few big corporations gonna afford to send out mail as luxurious and expensive as those students sent me. They said they needed money to, quote, keep the pressure on to end the war in Vietnam by organizing more and more demonstrations and sit-downs and takeovers and bend-downs on campuses in ghettos and in the nation's capital. My first instinct, of course, was to write them a large check, but then a couple of questions popped into my mind, so I wrote them a letter instead. I asked the Students Mobilization Committee what exactly they were students of. Clearly not of foreign affairs, or they'd have heard the news that we are trying to end the war in Vietnam. That actually the president is giving up the presidency to prove that he means it, and that we've sent an army of peace negotiators to Paris to beg for peace on any terms. I also asked the Students' Mobilization Committee why it was necessary to spend so much money here to keep the pressure on us when the communists were spending so much there to keep the pressure on us, pl- plastering Saigon with enough rockets every day to kill and mutilate hundreds of civilians. I was also going to ask them, as the Students' Mobilization Committee, why they didn't try to get the money from the side who stood to benefit by their efforts. But then it could be they've already been kind to those kids, those useful kids. And this is Al Capp speaking to you on NBC's Monitor.
Our talking cartoonist airs his points of view every weekend on Monitor.
Oh, there, there, Sally. What's wrong?
Oh, Mommy, I'm so sunburned.
Oh, poor darling. Mother will fix that sunburn right away. Just take this Solocane spray and spray here and here. How does your sunburn feel now?
The pain's all gone, Mommy.
Yes, when the sun burns tender flesh. Quick, stop sunburn pain with Solocane. Solocane stops sunburn pain faster, more completely than ordinary first aids. Contains pain-killing benzocaine used by doctors. Get lotion, cream, or spray today. Stop sunburn pain with Solocane.
When eating too much or too fast causes pressure and gas, Digel works as no plain acid can. It neutralizes excess acid and has the extra action of simethicone that breaks up bubbles of gas. D-I-G-E-L, Digel, the extra action antacid for more complete relief.
Sharing a love I thought would last forever. Moonlight to show the way so we can follow. Waiting inside her eyes was my tomorrow. Then something changed her mind. Her kisses told me I had no love in arms to hold me. Every day I wake up and I start to hang up, knowing that it's cloudy above. Every day I start up and I cry my heart out, lonely as a man without love. Every day I wake up and I start to break up, lonely as a man without love. Every day I start up and I cry my heart out, lonely as a man.
Advice to the Lovelorn from Engelbert Humperdinck.
In the 1900s, cigarettes were considered so new that we used an average of only two packs per person a year. By 1930, that figure rose to 70, and scientists soon became suspicious of cigarettes as a possible health problem. In the 50s, research was going on, both in this country and abroad. By 1962, the average per capita consumption of cigarettes reached 200 packs a year. Something had to be done. One of the reasons for concern is the great increase in lung cancer. In the United States alone, lung cancer deaths have increased from 3,000 in 1930 to 50,000 in 1965. Facts are facts. You can't argue with a fact. You can't ignore it. Or can you? Write for the newest free booklet, Facts About Smoking and Health, U.S. Public Health Service, Washington, D.C., 20201.
There's a new one titled Window on Moscow, and the orchestra belongs to Hugo Strasser. Monitor belongs to everyone, every weekend, everywhere across the nation. In Shreveport, Louisiana, people hear us on KRMD. Time for all stations to give their names, and then we'll return. Brad Crandall here.
Don't go away, there's more to come. More to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon.
WNBC. Add your voice to the news. Call WNBC and let New York know what you think.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.
Here's Monitor music by the Angels. The song is called The Motley. The Baja Marimba Band on monitor playing Yeffer, That's My Baby. Thank you. weekends are always livelier, more informative, more entertaining, because there's Monitor. I'm Brad Crandall. In this half hour, you'll be shocked to find how easily the wrong people can buy guns. And there's also news from the auto racing world on Monitor's Sport of Speed. But first, some Monitor music. Frank Sinatra Jr. with a style very much like Dad's.
Only when you're lonely do you realize that love is so much more than just a word that's thrown around without a care. And life can have no meaning when there are no dreams to share. If you've never felt a heartbeat, then your soul is cold and bare. Nothing can compare with this feeling of love. Reach out and you will find nothing is more important than love. Bright lights, the excitement of the crowd, but all their laughter just could not replace the loneliness of dawn. And then I found my moment, and her touch was soft and warm. Now I understand what life is about, and I know why I was born. Nothing can compare.
A huge wave of public support for stiffer gun control laws has swept across the country in the wake of Senator Kennedy's assassination. The same sentiment followed the deaths of President Kennedy and Martin Luther King, and yet the traffic in guns, both over the counter and by mail order, not only continues, but in fact is on the increase. One person who can testify to that fact with certainty is NBC News editor John Kelly. John, pleasure to have you with us on Monitor.
Thank you, Brad.
John, what did your research uncover concerning this increase in gun sales?
Well, authorities in Chicago, Detroit, Newark, and Baltimore, and Los Angeles, said they felt that there had been an increase in gun sales since the April 4th murder of Dr. King. The average in the five cities came out to be about 60%.
Is there a reason that you can cite for the increase in these things?
Well, authorities in the five cities I mentioned, Brad, gave three basic reasons that they felt was the cause for the increase.
Mm-hmm.
One was that the gun buyers feared, after the death of Dr. King, the legislation would be ramrodded through Congress. They also feared that there would be a black backlash. And then there was the wanton desire to participate in the rioting that followed King's death.
In case there's a party, let's be able to join, kind
yes,
of a thing.
Yes, this was basically what the authorities said was one of the reasons, one of the major reasons for the
mm-hmm.
increase.
Well, now, you personally tested the mail-order technique, too, didn't you? How did that work out?
Well, I had shipped to my 18-month-old nephew in Connecticut a 60-millimeter mortar, a 30-caliber carbine, mortar shells, and two repackable hand grenades, and he received them without any questions asked 36 hours after the order was placed in a New York store.
What about the attitudes of the owners and the salespeople about guns, John?
Well, when talking to these dealers, Brad, I approached them as a person building a private army and needing as many as 300 to 500 carbines and from 300,000 to a half million rounds of ammunition.
Uh-huh.
Their only reluctancy in this thing was that, I wouldn't call it reluctancy, actually. Their only regret was that they just didn't have that many arms to sell because There had been a run, and the manufacturers couldn't supply the demand. One gun dealer said, why should I sell you 500 carbines at a discount when I could move that many out of here in a day at retail prices?
Mm-hmm. Well, now, did anybody ask you where this army was forming or for
what? Oh, no, there were no questions other than whether or not it would be a cash transaction.
Did anybody ever mention registering the transaction, such as, you know, the serial numbers of the weapons or something of this kind?
No, there was no question of that. In the case of the mortar being shipped to the 18-month-old nephew, the only thing there was cash. Cash is the only identification required in many of these things.
Well, now, nobody, in short, pursued your reasons for wanting anything from 1 to 500 weapons?
No, absolutely not. One dealer was reluctant to get involved in it for the simple reason he felt that the weapons could be traced back to him and he'd lose his license. Other than that, he couldn't care less what I was going to do with 500 carbines.
The possibility that you and 499 other guys were going to come sweeping down his main street tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock didn't occur to him, I guess, huh? That's a very interesting kind of an attitude. Well, now, in other words, if you had wanted to arm and prepare a private army of some kind, up to 500 men, then, all you'd have needed was the cash.
Absolutely. I found that there were no other requirements. There was no hesitancy over selling the weapons. Their hesitancy was over having the equipment traced back to their stores. As one New York gun dealer said when I asked him about buying kegs of gunpowder, "That's touchy stuff. I don't keep it around here. The cops and the FBI and everybody comes around asking questions, and it's getting so you can't make a decent living."
Well, let me ask you a question. Where did you do this shopping? In what areas? What states? What city?
Metropolitan New York area.
You're kidding. Were the guns always to be shipped outside the state, like the weaponry that was sent up to Connecticut to your nephew?
Yes, this was one thing that they said they definitely wanted to do, was ship all the weapons out of state.
I'm a little stunned, John. Were you?
I was surprised at the beginning, but after a while, the surprise wore off, and I found this was an accepted thing, that many people apparently go into these stores seeking that many weapons. Of course, there's the story in New Jersey that one paramilitary organization owns a tank.
Are you scared as I am when I listen to this?
I'm concerned.
John, I think we all have a right to be concerned. My guest has been John Kelly, an NBC News editor who assigned himself on his own time to investigate and uncover the lack of control and moral discipline in the sale of guns today. Or, as John put it, cash is the only identification required. There is a footnote to the story. It was reported this afternoon that the store at which John Kelly made his purchases went out of business yesterday, one day after he broke his story. Speed, thrills, excitement. It's all part of the auto racing world, and Chris Economaki has the latest word on that coming up shortly. So stay on the Monitor Beacon.
If your problem is keeping up with what's happening in and around New York, my advice is, following Dr. Joyce Brothers, join me, Lee Leonard, weekdays 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. right here on WNBC. The latest news, the newest people, and the best ideas, yours and mine, on The Lee Leonard Show, 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. on WNBC Radio.
Do you believe in putting your money on a winner? If you do, the American Korean Foundation asks you to put it on the Korean people, who are making a startling economic comeback. Your contributions helped, and the Koreans are building homes and schools, producing more food. In many ways, the Koreans are winning, but thousands still need help badly. Won't you give it through American Korean Foundation, Grand Central Post Office, New York.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.
Once again, it's Monitor at 15 minutes before the hour, a perfect time for Monitor music and the voice of Jane Morgan. It's a new one titled, Look What You've Done to Me.
Look what you've done to me. You took the sun from me. You changed my heart. look what you've done to me.
Monitor presents Sport of Speed. It's time for your weekend checkpoint with Chris Economaki, with action from the world of auto racing. Brought to you by the refiners of world-famous Pennsylvania-grade crude oils. Chris will be along in just a moment, but first of all, let me ask you a question. Is your car's engine running like something doesn't fit? Well, you'd better change to a brand of Pennsylvania-grade crude motor oil. It's a proven fact that crude oils from wells in the Pennsylvania region produces oils of superior lubricity, or oiliness. Because they have a unique molecular structure, these famous oils last longer, make your car's engine run smoother. Follow the lead of sports car fans. For the good of your engine, insist on Pennsylvania-grade crude motor oils. And by the way, if you are a sports car fan, get this. The Pennsylvania Grade Crude Oil Association, again this year, is repeating its offer of rally kits. Each kit has six big checkpoint signs, windshield stickers numbered 1 through 100, and a pad of 120 sanctioned rally scoring slips. To get a rally kit for your club, just send $1 to Checkpoint, Box 96, Oil City, Pennsylvania, zip code 16301. Now, here's Chris Economaki.
Thanks, Mel. Weekend sprint car victories were recorded by Gary Bettenhausen, Don Nordhorn, and the Weatherman. Bettenhausen won his second straight USAC Open cockpit main event Friday night at Pittsburgh-Heidelberg Raceway. He outraced Sonny Yates, Bob Pratt, Chuck Engel, and Larry Dixon in the 30-lapper on the half-mile paved track. When Gary tried for his third straight triumph at Reading, Pennsylvania last night, the Rainmaker intervened with the show being washed out. This afternoon at Winchester, Indiana, on the IMCA circuit, Don Nordhorn topped the field in the 30-lap headliner, leading Benny Rapp, Ray Wright, Cliff Cochran, and Bob Black to the flag. The stock cars saw action under the arc lights last night, with Plymouth's Richard Petty a smoking victor in a 100-mile NASCAR event at Greenville, South Carolina. He outraced Ford's David Pearson in the 200-lapper, which saw a lot of body blocking on the narrow track. Third went to John Sears, fourth to Clyde Lynn, and fifth to Jabe Thomas. In Indianapolis, on the 1 mile state fair track, a record turnout of 38,000 fans came awfully close to rioting as Don White, the defending United States Auto Club stock car champion, was given a 100-mile victory over Al Unser and Butch Hartman. All three drove Dodge Chargers. Two Rodgers, McCluskey and Regas, were fourth and fifth in Plymouth. The fans didn't like White's passing of leader Unser on a yellow flag with three laps to go. And then, to make matters worse, as Unser tried to regain the lead on the very last lap, his and White's cars bumped together, and Unser spun out. The fans weren't the only mad ones. Unser was furious, and it can be understood, with the purse being a record $25,000. In the Trans Am Sedan Championships, Mark Donahue continued his domination of the circuit, winning this afternoon's event at the Bridgehampton Road Circuit on Long Island. He drove a Chevrolet Camaro. Javelin-mounted George Palmer was second, with Sam Posey, Donahue's teammate, in a second Penske Camaro in third place. Bill Jowett in a Camaro was fourth, with Tony Adamowicz fifth and first under 2 liters in his Porsche. In Zandvoort, Holland, Scotsman Jackie Stewart and Jean-Pierre Beltoise of France made it a 1-2 finish for de Gaulle in the Dutch Grand Prix, registering France's first world title victory in 16 years. Third went to Pedro Rodriguez in a BRM, fourth to Jackie Ickx in a Ferrari, with Silvio Moser in a BRM and Chris Amon in a Ferrari rounding out the point-winning top six. Point leader Graham Hill crashed out after a spin while leading, and Team McLaren drivers Bruce McLaren and Dennis Holm, along with Brabham pilots Dan Gurney and Jochen Rindt, all dropped out of the contest. At Langhorne, Pennsylvania this afternoon, it was hot, both on and off the track. Gordon Johncock beat Indy winner Bobby Unser to the flag in a seesaw 150-miler for Indianapolis cars that saw only 9 of 23 running at the finish. Gary Bettenhausen was third, with Mike Mosley fourth and Larry Dixon fifth. Front runners Art Pollard, Mario Andretti, Al Unser, and Wally Dallenbach all went out of the race, either with mechanical troubles or via the accident route, none of which were serious. The purse, a record $42,200. This is Chris Economaki reporting.
Sport of Speed with Chris Economaki is brought to you twice each weekend by the many famous brands of Pennsylvania-grade crude oil for the lasting good of your engine. Insist on a Pennsylvania motor oil. This is Mel Allen for Monitor Sports.
Sport and Speed is a regular feature every weekend on Monitor.
Just keep tuned to Monitor.
Sunday afternoon, going to fun and AIDS debate. Laugh about it, shout about it, when you've got to choose. Every way you look at it, you lose. Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Our nation turns its lonely eyes to you. That you say, Mrs. Robinson, Joe to Joe has left and gone away. Hey, 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 hey.
Simon Garfunkel and that lady named Robinson. Question, please. Can wonton soup, egg rolls, beef in oyster sauce, Peking duck, can these cause dizzy spells, numbness, strange aches and pains? A Chinese-born doctor says yes in a medical journal paper, and his theory has set off quite a controversy. Other doctors responded, saying their patients, too, suffer from Chinese restaurant syndrome. And the Chinese restaurant owners responded long and loud with strong denials and contempt, and in fact said that they were being mixed up with Italian restaurant owners. However, meanwhile, those who have CRS ignore their strange malady, which research cannot pin down, and continue their Oriental dining contented and resolved to endure whatever may come later. And as for me, pass the fortune cookies. Dangerous Age, and it was played by Dudley Moore's orchestra. NBC Monitor News on the Hour coming up next to keep your weekend right up to the minute on all world and national developments. So stay tuned. This is Brad Crandall.
The wheel must take the station break. Don't turn your set off. Don't you make a mistake.